Pee-wee Herman says the magic word, everybody loves Crash Bandicoot, and Lego gets the good Star Wars this week on 302010. 302010, here we go again, analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days, and there's so much to say. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another thrilling episode of 302010. I am Chris Antista, subbing in for Brett Elson, who is away at space camp on an emergency call. I can't say any more about it. Who else do we have with us today?
Dave Rudden.
And Danny Goodman.
Yes, our regular hosts who talk about this week in pop culture history, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. Again, don't have a good elevator pitch for this show yet, but it is basically if you could sit in a chair and open a portal to see what happened that very week in history, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. 30, 20, 10, baby.
It's a show for you, your kids, and your grandkids, provided each of you were born 10 years apart.
Yep.
Is that possible? And then you're listening from jail.
Yeah. Oops.
And today we'll be looking at the week of, what is this, September 9th through the 15th, 16th?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a more exciting week than last week, I'll say that. We actually have movies to talk about. But perhaps the biggest movie that nobody even considers a movie... we have this debuting in certain corners of the world.
The wizardry of Lucas. The mastery of Coppola. The phenomenal music and dance of Michael Jackson. Captain EO. In spectacular 3D. Captain EO will soon be the newest attraction at Disneyland and Walt Disney World, and nowhere else in the universe.
Wow. That's
not even Euro Disney.
We did an old Laser Time episode. It's kind of like this show, but pop culture topic based. It was one of my favorite episodes I ever did. Mm-hmm. The most expensive everything. Right. And I think even adjusting for inflation, mm-hmm. judging by the minute, Captain EO, a 3D movie exclusive to Disneyland parks, is the most expensive film ever made.
Cost I can't believe that. Yeah.
Cost $23 million to make a 17-minute film in 1985. Created by George Lucas, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, starring Angelica Houston and Michael Jackson. Holy shit, Captain EO is great. Luckily, you can see it because this only happened once, and I can't think of many television phenomenons that only happened once. MTV had a Michael Jackson weekend and somehow convinced Disney to let them show Captain EO on TV. So if you see it on YouTube, it is the one, the only ever appearance of Captain EO. It has never been on video. It was considered lost to time. Then Michael Jackson died, and I believe in Disneyland, I think there's an upcoming expiration date, but in Tomorrowland, you can see the Captain EO revival, and it's kind of nice. The queue has a behind the scenes, like how it all happened, and it's just a really fun film.
Yeah. This debuted back when I was going to Disneyland an awful lot because I live nearby, and local passes were super cheap back then.
Yeah.
You could pretty much get an annual pass for what it costs for one day now.
Wow.
Yeah. And, But Captain EO was there, and it was there for so long that it created dissonance because Michael Jackson looked different than he did when you were at the park. You know, it was like a weird window back to, oh yeah, I remember when Michael Jackson used to look very different. You know, this is more like it's in sort of the bad period.
We were
period,
looking at him differently. I think it closed in Disney World in 94 and Disneyland in 97. And it's very 80s.
Yeah.
And it long overstayed its welcome. But then in 2010, when Jackson died, it came back. And it's been there ever since, I think, in multiple parks around the world.
They say it's going to close again soon or something?
I heard one of them is going to close again soon. I love talking about Tomorrowland. And Tomorrowland is like the most... in limbo section of the Disney park. Everything closes all the time. There's you walk into Disneyland, it's beautiful, but it's like a husk of everything that used to be there replaced with nothing. But who knows? You had to have acquired Star Wars for a reason, right, Disney?
Is there any sort of a ride element to it?
Shake?
Okay, so it's like Universal Studios. Like everything at Universal Studios.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's I can't really say it's the 4D experience. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience and the Muppets when they had, like, the blowers under the seat stuff and wind and
the
rain,
Bugs Life
whatever.
One has ants that crawl under your asshole in California Adventure.
Well, I don't want anything Michael Jackson related under my seat.
But the 3D is still, it's still really,
the 3D
really,
was really
it
good.
Looks great.
This is the first time I saw anything polarized 3D instead of, like, the red-blue 3D. Oh. And it was like, oh, shit, those claws are super coming at me.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it just a few years ago, and, like, it's still wow. It'll still wow you. And, like, you can't say that for a lot of things made in 1980. It looks expensive, and it looks really cool. Michael Jackson is Captain EO, and he has a bunch of alien and furry pals. No real CG in it, but Angelica Houston's this weird, like, alien queen type monster. Yeah. Lots of dance sequences, really, really fun. Really fun. But yeah, I love that it cost over $1 million a minute, technically.
God damn.
Yeah. Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas,
why?
What the fuck? But again, really cool. But hey, guess what? We do have some movies to talk about this week.
Probably all cost less for a 90 to 120 minutes that this movie cost.
Oh, yeah.
I'd 17.
I'd never, like, I cannot believe this. Every single week, we tell you to watch Electric Boogaloo, the Canon Films documentary. Because every week, there is a new Canon film movie released. I've never heard of this. Avenging Force.
It began with a celebration. Shattered by brutal violence. Until Michael Dudikoff, star of American Ninja, became the Avenging Force.
Yeah! God, every one of these seems like the 80s encapsulated in a trailer. Mm-hmm. God damn
that
it.
That music, man.
Who is Michael Dudikoff?
He was
from American Ninja. Like
He was kind of a third string action guy.
Yeah. And this probably isn't going to work, but I never heard of it, and I thought Elston was mistaken in his notes that there was a Robin Williams movie called Seize the Day. Based on
Saul Bellow story?
Yeah, yeah. Because if you type into YouTube Robin Williams Seize the Day, you rightfully get a shitload of Dead Poets Society Carpe Diem nonsense. And, like, it took me a while to find this. I don't know if this is, like, a super low-budget movie, but the trailer is, like, real lo-fi with horrible sound. But it looks like one of Williams' serious acting performances. It reminded me of A Serious Man, that great underrated Coen Brothers movie. A man just, like, constantly kicked in the dick by every situation in his life until he's eventually made insane.
I lost my job. Almost 40 years old and out of work like some stupid teenage kid.
Yeah, Robin Williams getting treated incorrectly by his dad. But the coolest thing about it...
I think that's Joseph Wiseman as his dad, who played Dr. No.
So you guys are fortunate enough to be seeing the video in this situation, because Brett's computer is not here. But this is great, because I have never seen this person in a serious role of any kind. It looks like I have no idea who this character is, but it is Jerry Seinfeld's dad.
Don't worry about your investments, Tommy. I promise you the flood will go up.
Jerry Stiller.
Making money is aggression. People go into the market to kill. They say, today I'm going to make a killing.
You gotta invent the bro. The man's here.
Serenity now. I've never seen that guy not yelling at the top of his lungs.
Yeah.
Jerry Stiller didn't watch a lot of King of Queens, so I couldn't tell you. But
even his Stiller and Mira stuff, it's not quite so much screen.
Where would you even see that? This is Ben Stiller's dad, by the way, and his mother. They were part of a comedy duo.
They were a comedy duo. Yeah. Stiller and Mira. Yeah.
What, like, for, I guess variety shows? You could see footage of them doing this.
Yeah,
they never had
I
a
guess.
Show of their own.
I feel like maybe they did briefly. I know I've seen a clip of them on some variety show with their son Benji. It's like, little Benji, so he's gonna sing a song or something. It's like,
we're gonna get him into the movie business. Nepotism.
But they had a Hulu show for a little while.
Did they?
Yeah, and it was kind of like, it's been like, I watched like two or three of them, and they were charming. But it felt like the comedians in cars getting coffee, except they're not in a car, and it's only the two of them.
No.
But it's like they're just talking about funny stuff. Like, have you heard about cell phone?
And Mira, R.I.P.
Movie called Night Mother with Sissy Spacek and Bancroft. I can't tell the notes. Never seen it, never heard of it.
It's an adaptation of a Pulitzer Prize winning play.
Not Mother Night. That's Kurt Vonnegut.
Right.
Yes.
Wow, that is confusing.
Yes.
Right. Where it's
not
it's,
Night the Holocaust thing.
No.
Okay.
Where it's the two of them. They play mother daughter, and Sissy Spacek, the daughter, just kind of off the cuff announces, "By the way, I'm committing suicide tonight." And then they have a discussion about their lives and why she would want to do such a thing.
Because have you read the news? Captain EO is exclusive to a park I can't go to.
I can't get to Orlando.
Life's not worth living.
Robin Williams is getting berated by his dad in this movie about someone who's going to commit suicide in a few hours.
But a movie I do like a great deal, River's Edge, came out this week.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I really should have watched this.
I've seen it twice in revival theaters.
Mm-hmm.
In the last few years, I really, really like it. It's a very, very good 80s teen drama. It is about a very strange boy, a very strange man who kills a girl, tells his friends, and the rest of the movie is about his friends trying to protect him from being caught. The whole time, he's like, why did you do this? He's like, I don't know. Barely talk. Who cares? I killed her. Why?
Yeah. Wow.
But she probably was talking shit. Nah, she wasn't doing anything.
What a way to relate to a protagonist.
And great performances from Keanu Reeves. Dennis Hopper is in the movie. It's fucking awesome. But if you ever wanted to wonder why certain people think Crispin Glover is an amazing person, he is up to 11 in this film. And I've heard people say his performance is cheesy. I fucking love it. There is no other character like this in the universe. Here he is talking to Mike. His character becomes obsessed with protecting Mike from being caught for the murder. And like, I don't know, it's narcissistic, it's adorable, but it's full Crispin Glover.
You don't even care, do you?
I ain't drinking.
About yourself, you dumb fuck. How do you expect other people to care about you? It's people like you that are sending this country down the tubes. No sense of pride, no sense of loyalty, no sense of nothing, man. Why do you think there's so many fucking welfare cases in this country? Why do you think it is that Russia's gearing up to kick our asses, man?
Drink your beer, Lane.
No, I won't drink my fucking beer. I'm talking here.
I love this performance.
Is he supposed to be wearing makeup?
Oh, Crispin Glover?
Yeah,
because he's just whiter than normal.
He looks made up, like a little bit more mascara and a little bit more lip liner, and he's in drag.
And they're all kind of like outcast gothy kids, army jackets.
So the killer in that movie, by the way, is Dr. Arts from Lost. He gets blown up by the dynamite.
That's where I know him from.
Yes. I've seen that guy in a bunch of stuff.
He's a great character actor.
River's Edge, directed by Tim Hunter. I actually thoroughly recommend this film. It's pretty great. Yeah. Dennis Hopper in a wonderfully subdued, non-Hoppery role.
Yay.
But love this period for Dennis Hopper. But that wraps it up for movies. TV is also pretty stellar this week.
Yeah, again, another stacked week and a lot of great classic kid stuff. Starting with the...
Hold on, I think I got it.
Yes.
Pee-wee's Playhouse debuted this week.
Damn right it did.
And, even though this is what a lot of people remember Pee-wee for, it was kind of like a culmination of a lot of work. Like, 1985, we had Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
We did. One of the highest grossing movies of 1985.
Yeah, 1981, we had that HBO special. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, like, this wasn't just the thing
that
burst onto
the scene.
Let's see
if I can get these characters out. Let's see if I can remember them all. That. The Cool Cat, Shaky Baby, and the Puppet Band.
Yeah!
You
got
a couple arms to walk in. Got a genie to grant a wish. At Pee-wee's Playhouse. Pee-wee spinning, Mr. Windows grinning. Pee-wee's flying by.
Powers.
Dude, this show is so much fun to revisit, if you haven't done so.
Yeah.
And it was shot in such a way... Thank God, Shout Factory was able to restore it to high definition.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
It looks really good. The design is amazing. I think there's a whole documentary about the guy who did the art design called Beauty's Embarrassing.
Yeah. But I mean, if you go back and watch that 1981 special, it's not for kids.
Dude, it is very not for kids. I believe he hypnotizes a woman to remove her clothes.
Yeah,
or maybe
and then the
he has sexual impulses.
The 85 movie is slightly more for kids, but also, you know.
I have called Pee-wee's Big Adventure the Scott Pilgrim for baby boomers.
Yeah. It's got
like
everything
the same
you love
reason
from
we
the
celebrate like DuckTales and NES games. That movie is all about like Godzilla, Howdy Doody, big ass bikes.
Yeah.
Love Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
But yeah, so it kept a lot of elements of like that stage show, like Miss Yvonne and Captain Carl and John B. But made it, yeah, it simultaneously made it like entertaining to kids, but mm-hmm. still kept like adults like who would watch this.
My parents, it was one of those shows they didn't. My parents didn't mind watching with me.
But yeah, there's so many classic elements to mm-hmm. it. There's the secret
and
word.
If you heard that, there's the secret word, magic screen, a thing he disappears into, claymation pterodactyls, an evil marionette,
king
a
of
puppet
cartoons.
Jazz band, king of cartoons would come by and they'd play a public domain horrible iWorks
it's
cartoon.
It's almost like, I mean, even though every episode had like a thread and a story, mm-hmm. but it's like. It's kind of like a sketch show. Where it's like 1 minute we'll be talking to this map, and then we'll be watching an old cartoon and a Penny.
We'll watch Penny, which I think is that come from the guy who made Hey Arnold, I believe.
I think so. Yeah,
Penny, a really fun show. It's one of those things that like it's a kid show. It's from the 80s. I bet you could plunk down any kid and they'll watch the shit of this. Like everybody wanted to live in Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah,
the claymation is so much fun.
I feel like I should love Pee-wee more, but there is something
What's wrong with you.
Here, for some reason, when there's a decibel level the comedy gets to that I can't take it quite so much.
It's like,
I don't think I could ever watch one. I could not watch more than one episode in a row of this.
Really?
I feel kind of the same way about The Young Ones. Almost the same way about Duckman. There's just something, the noise level, the cacophony of it. It's like...
I have a solution for you.
I can't take it.
Marijuana.
That would
marijuana
help
will
yep,
help
that would do
enhance
it.
Yeah. Pee-wee Herman to such a great extent. And I believe it's all on Netflix. Netflix has that exclusive movie, Pee-wee's Big Holiday, which is fantastic.
Okay.
It is really good. It is harkens back to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's a nice little road movie, again, almost like a sketch comedy, instead of whatever. This is a weird transition, though, that Pee-wee had a big, giant movie. I can't understate how well that movie did for how little it costs. Then why make the jump immediately in television? Mm-hmm. / Big Top Pee-wee sucks so hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It seems like a movie that they cast Pee-wee in rather than a movie written for Pee-wee Herman. All I remember about it is a circus and a hot dog tree.
Yeah.
He has
Screech is in it.
He has a really? He has a real love interest.
He's one
I'll
of the old people turned to a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And the fact that Pee-wee is like a kind of a sex object in that movie. Mm-hmm. Like, two women want to fuck him.
Yeah, it's really
That's
weird.
Weird.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
And
it,
again, have you seen the new movie?
No,
It's the best story of gay romance you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, no, I got to watch it. It's weird, though. It is weird that they'd be like, oh, you had a hit movie. Mm-hmm. Let's give you a Saturday morning show?
Yeah, more likely, why would you want to do that? But I guess the production schedule allowed for a little versatility, because by the time Paul Rubens, the man who played Pee-wee Herman, got caught, who knows, exposing himself in a Florida movie house, they canceled the series and had two full seasons left to run of the show. So he had already wrapped, because remember his mugshot is like him with a fucking goatee and
long
hair. So he had wrapped the show 2 years before we saw the last episode.
Oh,
but it's
God.
Still, man, this show is really great.
Yeah.
And they revived the stage show for an HBO special. Anything else? Probably won some Emmys, I would guess.
Yeah, I have to assume. And by the way, that theme, not at the time, was not... attributed to her at the time, but Cyndi Lauper would later confirm that is her singing the theme.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So it's just like when I saw that, I just pictured like, holy shit! Like in 1986, I would give every one of my limbs to hang out with both Cyndi Lauper and Pee Wee Herman at the same time. Like just being—that's like the best meeting of the minds I could possibly think of.
Oh yeah, and the show it had its foundation in the Groundlings, so like part of its cast was Lawrence. You can see Lawrence Fishburne as Cowboy Curtis.
And Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman is Captain Carl. Phil Hartman, who also co-wrote Pee-wee's Big Adventure with Paul Rubens.
Yeah,
Hartman has one tiny appearance at the very end of the film.
Yeah.
As a reporter.
But so that debuted on September 13th, 1986. That's not the only icon of children's entertainment that debuted that day. And we touched on it last week. We had Filmation's Ghostbusters. This week, we have The Real
Ghostbusters.
Yes. So yeah, it had to take that name in order to avoid confusion, but also to assert dominance over Filmation's Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. They show that that Ghostbusters paid to rip them off.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
It's very strange. These were different times.
It diverted somewhat from the show in the fact that Slimer was now an ally of the Ghostbusters and not a friend. They did explain that later on.
The Real Ghostbusters will return after these messages.
If you're a kid, you definitely remember the logo throwing to break.
We now return to the Real Ghostbusters.
And he has a different voice every time.
I guess he takes the form of every single Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
That was Arsenio Hall as Winston Zeddemore.
I have some clips to showcase that aspect of it. But this show is actually really fun. Like, it holds up pretty well. It's a good concept.
The animation,
for a kid
not
show.
So much.
The animation, not so much, but just the idea of, like, not too scary ghosts and people who kill them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a great concept for a kid's show. It's beautifully, the designs are beautiful. The toys were amazing.
Yeah.
And if you were, like I said, I was born in the hype for Ghostbusters 2. I was too young to really love the original Ghostbusters movie, but I did thanks to this show. It was always weird. Like, why isn't Slimer in the movie more? I love this show. I think it's, they finally brought it back out on DVD, but yeah, you had mentioned the voices.
Yeah.
And this is a lovely fucking pop culture loop. The original voice of Peter Venkman, Bill Murray's character. Oh, on our Facebook channel, we have the original 4-minute pilot presentation.
Oh, wow.
Which is gorgeously animated.
And they more accompany, or they more, they look a lot more like their movie versions. Because
only Bill, you can see how Bill Murray presents a problem. If you go back and watch the intro now, you can see the less quality of animation. Yeah. That's the Bill Murray character. That's where Bill Murray's on screen. But in the pilot presentation, he very much looks like Bill Murray, and it is gorgeous. And they cannibalize that for the opening, and you've seen 1,000 times. But again, it's on our Facebook channel. But Lorenzo Music was cast as Peter Venkman, which you may recognize, well, from American Rabbit. 30-20-10 fans. No, Garfield, the voice of Garfield.
Well, hello, I'm Peter Venkman. Dr. Peter Venkman. I'm a scientist.
That's so weird.
And I love lasagna.
That's so weird. So he would.
I'm calling Dr. Newhart.
Lorenzo Music would go on to play Garfield, and then when Garfield was made into a movie, then it was voiced by Bill Murray. Very confusing. And I recently watched a documentary on Netflix called Ghost Heads about Ghostbusters fandom, which is. You got to give Ghostbusters credit for having one great movie, and the sequel is whatever. It's fine. I don't love it as much as I love the first one. And a couple of cartoons, its fandom has remained for a long time.
For better or worse.
I don't know. Oh, sorry. Yes, I forgot about it. That's all in the distant past for me. But
not for Leslie Jones, it's not.
Oh, poor Leslie. Why? Leave Leslie Jones alone! What does she do to anybody? God damn it. Yes, but Ghostbusters, to me, outside of recent events, is just pure fun.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just hearing the theme song, love it. And Dave Coulier is in the Ghost Heads documentary, and he's like, look, I was Joey Gladstone on Full House, the biggest show in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody dresses up like Joey Gladstone.
I see people
not only dressed like Peter Venkman, but like my Peter Venkman in those colors with that hair.
He sees
that more. And I found this fairly adorable clip of Dave Coulier going on the Arsenio Hall show, where they both reminisce about their previous gigs in the animation voiceover field.
You and I go way back as stand-up comics.
Yeah.
And after that, Ghostbusters and cartoons and stuff.
Yeah, we worked together on the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, are you still doing cartoons?
Still doing cartoons. Working on the Muppet Babies. We're doing another season of that.
Yeah. All kind of cartoon boy, you do amazing stuff. I used to come in and just do me, you know. It's like when they needed a black cartoon character, that was me, you know. But he was talented.
Well, see, Arsenio did a character. You got to do your character. You guys want to hear his character?
No, then no.
he did a character, Winston, on the real Ghostbusters, and I was Peter Venkman, which is Bill Murray, which was kind of, oh, cut it out, I'm serious, get out of here, Egon. Arsenio did a character named Winston. Go ahead, just say,
get in the car and chill out. That was me.
His character.
I just thought that was adorable, and you can't see the clip, but Dave Coulier.
Oh, God.
It has
Love
a suit
outfit.
Made of the 90s right there. Like a giant puffy suede jacket with a beret.
Yep.
With this mullet flowing out the back. It's beautiful.
By the way, do you remember who played both Ray Stantz and Slimer?
Frank Welker?
Yes. Yeah. The only person who could possibly play an illiterate ghost and a fat Ghostbuster.
I mentioned that on a previous show. I love that I was reading some controversy how, like, the suits hated Ray on the real Ghostbusters. Like, who wants to see this idiot fat nerd? Get him the fuck out of here. Whereas, like, nerds would have gotten wind of that. Like, you want to cut out Ray Stantz, the heart and soul of the Ghostbusters? If you're a real Ghostbusters fan, not only did Dan Aykroyd make everything or come up with the idea, Ray Stantz, you need that character.
He's most relatable.
He's both funny and, like, he explains everything.
Yeah.
Ray Stantz is the best. And if this executives had... They had to fight to keep Ray in, had to slim him down because the studio hated him that much. And we recently did a Laser Time about... What was it? Like, mascots that, like, food mascots that outlive their, like, fucking Pink Panther Insulation, and like that Slimer on High C way outlasted the Ghostbusters phenomenon for by a couple of years, and that flavor lasted for another 10 years, like into the 2000s. Ecto Cooler is what we're talking about, everybody. It's delicious. And again, I'm going to point it out here, had the new Ecto Cooler. High C is now owned by Coke, as is Surge. It's Surge without carbonation. It is not Ecto Cooler. I'm calling shenanigans.
So that was... The Real Ghostbusters wasn't the only movie adaptation into a Saturday morning cartoon. We also had the debut of Teen Wolf.
Oh, goodness.
Which was adapted from the Michael J. Fox movie, but it added grandparents and the little sister, and all, and they were all werewolves, too.
I remember the intro is one of the most 80s things you have ever seen in your life.
Where's God when the moon is full? Oh, no. Not again.
This is happy.
If anyone sees me like this,
hey man, say, don't be shy.
Holy shit.
If it happens to you.
Hi, Grandpa. Good morning, Scotty.
That's right, because they're all his family's all werewolves.
The best
too.
Part of that intro, you should look it up on YouTube, is like
the live action 80s music video.
Yeah, it's like weird,
footage.
Yeah, live action Take On Me, aha kind of drawings of
a guy
of
in a werewolf
Wolf.
Mask with like headphones rocking out.
But now there's a new Teen Wolf that's live action and
I
serious.
I think it's over.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
I think it just ended. They just announced it at least. I don't know.
That's so again. That's so bizarre that someone like made something just for me, a Teen Wolf show, and I don't even know what it looks like.
Yeah, and to round out the cartoons that debuted this week, there was also The New Adventures of Johnny Quest and Rambo: The Force of Freedom.
I could not find one clip of that new Johnny Quest show.
Really?
Yeah. What kept popping up is the 90s reboot, The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest.
Oh, I'm betting Ray Spann through some barrels, though.
And I feel like we should hold off on Rambo until Christmas because he's got a classic episode. But there's also so many live action shows that we've got to get into. Mm-hmm. So on September 11th, 1986, there was the premiere of Our House, which is a show about a multi-generational family.
I remember this.
Two of the generations included Wilford Brimley and Shannon Doherty.
I won't be on TV anymore. Diabetes.
September 12th was the premiere of Easy Street. It was only a single season, but it starred Lonnie Anderson. Another syndicated juggernaut started this week, you know, a week after Oprah. This week we get Siskel and Ebert and the movies.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and that was also like a local Chicago show. Yeah. They had Siskel and Ebert had a dispute with their distributor, and they decided to go, hey, screw this, we're going to make our own show national,
weird.
And they became like the most renowned movie critics of all time.
I would say maybe to this day the most famous movie critics of all time.
Yeah,
you'll probably
definitely
to the end of our days we'll see caricatures of a fat guy and a bald guy arguing about movies.
Yeah. It's so funny, once I was in Chicago and I saw a thing like on the map back before we had maps on phones that was like, oh, wow, like a museum of television? Oh, this sounds good. I got like an hour I need to kill. I go in there and it's the Museum of Chicago Television. It was just Oprah and Siskel and Ebert. And it was just pictures of them, pretty much. Like, here's Oprah a while ago. Here's Oprah much more recently. And
she always shot in Chicago, though, right?
Yeah.
It was Ebert who convinced Oprah to, like, make her show syndicate. He's like, well, I'm doing this right now and it's going to, like, improve my audience, but it's going to way improve your audience.
Yep.
To do this, and they were both right. A couple other things. September 13th was the final episode of a show called Melba, which it was a show. It was a vehicle for a singer/actress Melba Moore. But this is of note because the show had the misfortune to premiere the evening of the Challenger disaster. Suffice to say, nobody was watching, and then they just ended up putting the rest of the episodes during the summer, and then the finale on September 13th. September 13th was also the Miss America pageant, which this year was won by Kelly Cash, who was the great niece of Johnny Cash.
Oh, shit.
Real piece of ass.
two television show premieres of note. September 15th is L.A. Law. I don't know enough about it.
All right, I know I can step in here because I'm the older person.
I mean, this is a real phenomenon that I'm just totally aware of.
Yeah, this was huge. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It's almost like if you can trace... these kinds of shows in this particular time slot. NBC, Thursday nights, the 10 to 11 slot. Mm-hmm. They have the, must-see TV comedies. Back then they had Cosby Family Ties and Cheers. Mm-hmm. And then L.A. Law is the drama, but it also has a lot of comedy. Mm-hmm. L.A. Law runs, God, how many years?
Like
8 or 9 years. And then it hands that spot over to ER. And ER is kind of the same sort of anchor show of the drama. But sometimes there's comedy. But most L.A. Law had more
comedy. I know L.A. Law isn't the first legal drama of its type, but it's the first one I was ever aware of. And from what little I know about it, it absolutely inspired so many things that came after it.
Think about it. It is the prototypical thing. And then it's about like an entire legal firm.
Yeah.
And so you have a lot of characters and a lot of different cases. And the actors were, you know, interesting in that it was kind of the first gigs for Blair Underwood and Jimmy Smits.
Oh, wow.
And then
Corbin Burnson
made him... It made him a star.
For a moment.
Yeah. And then they also like brought in people who'd been around for a while. Susan Day, who'd been on Partridge Family, and Harry Hamlin, who'd been Clash of the Titans.
Wow.
And
so glad you're here, Diana. Never would have been able to handle L.A. Law.
Yeah, and then, I mean, people cycled in and out, you know, over the years. But, yeah, it was a phenomenon. In some ways, you can almost say it's like Miami Vice, the lawyer show, and that it is sort of flashier, but definitely not as Miami Vice-y as that. But I'm bummed because I know there's stuff I want to talk about, but it's literally years from now. They had one of the best character deaths ever.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you talk about it now?
Yeah, so they had a character come on that was mean and nobody liked her. Mm-hmm. And she was shaking shit up and it looked like she was winning. And usually when you kill a character on TV, like there's a bunch of promos that you won't believe what happens. Will they all survive? And this one, they're just like, next time on L.A. Law, people talk, and there's lawyering and stuff. And they have a scene, and she's, like, talking, and everyone's like, man, we're really mad at her. And the elevator opens, and she just walks in and falls to her death. Wow. Commercial.
Wonderful.
It's a very Poochie-like death. Like,
she unpopular behind the scenes, too?
I'm not sure if it's, like, they just wrote themselves into a corner, or if they just decided, like, fuck it, let's just go for it.
Yeah. Quick and easy.
This is pull that band-aid. It's not quite as classic a show, but one that's in my heart an all-time classic and kind of prescient because the star of it passed away this year. There's a link to it.
Oh, let me see.
And it'll introduce the name of the show and the star.
I mean, we
star.
Talked about the show recently.
Really?
Here.
This is the theme to Gary Show. Gary called me up and asked if I would write his theme song. I'm almost halfway finished. How do you like it so far? How do you like the theme to Gary Show? This is the theme to Gary Show, the opening theme to Gary Show. This is the music that you hear as you watch the credits. We're almost to the part of where I start to whistle. Then we'll watch it's Gary Shandling Show.
God, this is so good.
Did we talk about this on 302010 or was it somewhere else?
I brought it up for Gilda Radner.
Oh, okay. But yeah, it's... fuck you, Mr. Stern.
One of my absolutely one of my top 10 favorite theme songs ever.
It is so fucking funny. But the show is really funny,
it's
too.
Such it's such a weird it, show, it kind but
of,
I love it.
Yeah, to me, I think of it the same way I think of Lucky Louie, which is like...
Yeah.
Great show in and of itself,
yeah,
but has been overshadowed by a later show that he did, in you know, with Louis. It was just Louis, but you know, later we would have the Larry Sanders show,
so
and
good.
Kind of overshadowed this show, but like,
and they're also similar in the both they know their TV shows,
yeah.
Like that's the point of It's Gary Shandling Show is, hi, I live in a sitcom,
yeah.
I talk to the audience. Oh, look who's at the door!
It's a guest star.
And
it makes it really fun to watch. I wish it aired somewhere.
Like, that's how, I mean, the way I started to watch it was Comedy Central during their early years when it's like, we'll take anything put in. Like, Soap, fine.
Yeah.
Gallagher Special, fine. Old SNL, fine. But this is like, I didn't know anything about Gary Shandling, really. Mm-hmm. I saw the show and I was like, this is amazing.
He's a hot comedian.
Yeah.
They used to run at like 11 p.m. Or so they used to run like pretty late at night when I was in high school, and I would just stay up really late and watch it.
It was a Showtime show
before
it became syndicated. It has a very weird history.
But I mean, I've watched maybe a season and a half of the Larry Sanders Show, but Gary Shandling, this show has more of a place in my heart than Larry Sanders, which I feel weird.
When he died, I rewatched the whole thing while working in this very studio.
Oh, man.
Put it on, just let it play. Loved it. And I do know, if you want to see the It's Gary Shandling Show, you can go to Amazon, and the first episode is available free for Prime members, I believe. None of the others, though.
No.
Yeah. And wow, to wrap up all of these very different shows, I thought I'd point out that during this week, I looked for both of them, and I can't find either, which frustrated me. But during this week, NBC aired two preview specials with two very different hosts. Mm. So to introduce their Saturday morning shows, there was a special called Alvin Goes Back to School, which was about they showed various clips of their Saturday morning cartoons, but it was interspersed with this story about Alvin trying to replace the principal with himself of his school. I didn't even know Alvin went to school. But
with that lucrative record contract.
For the primetime shows, there was a special called Bob Hope Lampoons the New TV Season.
Hey, isn't that wild? That's crazy, man.
Really, no. I was going to say really
Bob Hope
shows,
was so fucking old at this point.
Yeah.
Made it to 100.
So, yeah, that's his prime.
That is This Week in TV in 1986. But,
This Week in TV. A fun note for games. It's one of apparently a game that only I like. Hudson Soft's Adventure Island, known as Hudson's Adventure Island, but starring Master Higgins. Retronauts, a great show. Retronauts.com that talks about retro games, has a recent and fascinating history of both this. Adventure Island was a port of Wonder Boy, basically someone trying to bring a game to another system, but then they ended up branching off and becoming different things, different series, and Adventure Island is arguably more famous, but you know, not as beloved as I'd like it to be, but a beautiful, colorful side-scroller where you get to throw axes and fire at things while riding a skateboard. How can you beat that if you're a kid in the 80s? Love it. But yes, that's it for games in 1986 this week. But for music, Elvis Costello has this Blood and Chocolate album out. Cyndi Lauper's True Colors has sold $7 million worldwide. But number one right now is Top Gun from the Top Gun soundtrack, Take My Breath Away. And that will take us out. But we will be right back with the news, pop culture, movies, TV, and more for 1996 of this very week. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Here's the dumb thing that happened to me this week. I've been going on long bike rides, and I only have these hipster slim pants, not skinny jeans, slim jeans from Old Navy, so I don't get my pants caught in my bike chain. It really hurts to go on 30-mile bike rides in denim, and Heidi bought me a pair of bicycle shorts with gel-based crotch area, and like when I took those off after wearing them all day, Heidi kicked me in the ass, and it felt like somebody shoved... All the sweat had pooled inside that area, and it was so sensitive. It felt like somebody was trying to fuck me. It was a sensation I have never felt before. My ass was so sticky and
then
sensitive.
Then you're like, kick me again, please.
Yeah. God, don't stop. Don't stop until you can't see your knee. Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. I told you this was going to be the 90s, and that theme song, this song playing confirms it. New albums from New Edition, Rush, Test for Echo, the final album before drummer lyricist Neil Peart's tragic events. He died in a car accident?
His kid died in a car accident. And then his wife died from cancer around
Jesus
the same
Christ.
Time.
But we're coming in with Jamiroquai's Virtual Insanity off the Traveling Without Moving album. Did the title of the album inspire the video? Virtual Insanity. Right. Again, that video is just... perfect music
it
video
was the
period.
OK Go
just great
music video before OK Go,
and if you there's a clip of him on the MTV Music Awards where they do their best to recreate it in a live treadmills all over the floor. It's really neat. But Jamiroquai, wish I would have want to love Jamiroquai more than I do, but I just I've only seen that big ass hat and can't think of anything else. news this week, Mike Tyson has knocked out Bruce Sheldon in 109 seconds.
So this is his comeback tour. He had beaten Peter McNeely.
Yeah.
And was
I couldn't find, and I've always wanted to find, because Mike Tyson is the most famous boxer, but you cannot hire him for commercial endorsements because he's just got out of jail for rape charges. Yeah. So Peter, was that the white dude?
Peter McNeely, yeah.
He got the fucking commercial deals.
Yeah.
Being famous for being knocked out quickly by the better boxer. and the best commercial ever is Pizza Hut, where he is knocked out by a stuffed crust pizza. Like, it hits him in the face and he just gets knocked
Too
out.
Too heavy. And Bruce Sheldon, so Mike Tyson beat the star of Big Bang Theory. Is that Bruce Sheldon?
No. I have no idea what that means. Sheldon.
Yeah.
Got it.
Bazinga,
Dave. Yes. The other news I thought that was interesting, because this harkens back to a weird time for the music scene of 1996. A Sheryl Crow album is banned from Walmart.
Wow.
Her song, Love is a Good Thing, the lyrics say, "Watch out, sister, watch out, brother, watch out, children, as they kill each other with a gun they bought from Walmart discount stores."
Oh, that's invasive.
It is, but like, this is, I remember this being a much bigger deal back then, and it very much was, because Walmart was the leading retailer for music, but Walmart also wouldn't accept parental advisory albums, keeping out most of hip-hop unless they self-sanitize their own album. But now Walmart is literally saying, dictating what lyrics it'll allow. There's no cursing here. No, you can't talk shit about us in this store. We're not going to sell your album. So Sheryl Crow overnight lost the biggest American distribution channel for her own fucking album. Crazy. Thank God. Thank God nobody makes any money in the music business anymore, and Walmart is irrelevant to the music business. Yep. Also in the news, Greg Kinnear leaves his NBC Later show, handing the reins to Carson Daly.
Who still does it, probably. I don't know.
I mean,
who cares?
Can you?
It's 3 a.m.
Who else has a show? Only Adult Swim has a show that premieres at 1:30 a.m.
Yeah.
1:30 a.m.
Man, but Greg Kinnear is, like, in terms of talk shows, he's the person I think of, like, you blew it. You left that too early. Like, he was on Talk Soup and was great at the start of that, but left it before it
the
got
John
big.
Henson guy.
Yeah. Then he had this Late Show, left that before it had the chance to really grow and succeed.
To waste his time and get nominated for an Oscar in a year.
But then what did he do? Like, he's still doing movies, but like not ones that you recognize.
He's around, I'm
sure. Yeah, he had a little window there. He was doing pretty well. Yeah. And
He's in a movie now with Renee Zellweger, who looks nothing like she used to. Mm. But it's like the...
Don't know it.
I just saw the preview of it ahead of... That Ira Glass movie about with Mike Birbiglia about.
I know what you're talking about. Don't know the name. It has a super generic.
It has a super generic name, but the movie's all right. But it had this preview of, like, it's basically Renee Zellweger and Greg Kinnear take in a homeless man and make him a part of their family. And it's like, okay,
that should have premiered on NBC this year.
Yes.
But movies this week, a bunch of stuff I'm not that interested in. Maybe you will be. Jean-Claude Van Damme's Maximum Risk, co-starring Natasha Henstridge.
So I'm just picturing they're playing Risk, but it's like with actual like real countries.
I imagine it's like every other Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, and that it's not as good because it's not Hard Target where he knocks out a snake.
Yep.
The Rich Man's Wife, starring Halle Berry and Peter Gallagher. This seemed important at the time. I remember this being promoted a lot. I don't know if anybody remembers this. I saw this several times, and I do not remember anything about it. Feeling Minnesota, I think... Right. The more independent new line developed Fine Line Studios to release independent movies, and this just screams like post Tarantino, Kevin Smith, 90s.
Oh, no.
It's a small story with a great cast of Vincent D'Onofrio, Keanu Reeves, Delroy Lindo, Cameron Diaz, never looking hotter.
Biggest day of her life.
Forget about her, Matt. I'm not marrying him.
Hope you two kids will be very happy.
Can I miss thee?
The blushing bride and her husband-to-be were a picture of marital bliss.
They make a nice couple, don't they?
No, they don't.
Until she met the man of her dreams.
Not related to him, are you?
Keanu Reeves, baby. Ooh. Keanu Reeves falls in love with his brother's wife. There's almost nothing remarkable I can remember about this movie except that it got decent reviews. Yeah. It was marketed very heavily and... Just that New Line Cinema. I love New Line Cinema. I love growing up with New Line Cinema. They're releasing Freddy Krueger and at the time the highest grossing independent movie ever, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. And then they became big, a legit studio, and then created a fine line cinema to release independent movies like this. Remember when indie movies were all the rage? Miramax was kicking ass. This is taking a stab at that glory, but probably the most famous just because it got aired on HBO a ton.
They were orphans.
Put them down.
All domestically raised geese have to be rendered flightless.
No!
What are you doing? Stop it!
Stay off of my place!
Who needed a mother to teach them.
You gotta feed them every 2 hours, and you're not allowed to put them outside.
Amy.
Are you sure you can handle this?
And a father to show them the way.
Suppose I built an aircraft and then taught Amy how to fly it.
It's a very cute story, and it's I think it's based on a true story. Fly Away Home, starring Jeff Daniels and Anna Paquin, fresh from her Oscar win.
A couple years after Piano. Oscar win, but yeah, but, not doing an American accent.
I think everybody forget
well
that Rogue has an Oscar.
Oh yeah,
Rogue has an Oscar.
Little
people.
Rogue, she was really young.
She's really young. I think she up until Beast of the Southern Wild Girl, she was the youngest person to ever win an Oscar.
No, Tatum O'Neal. From Paper Moon, but
all right.
But
God
beats her by like a
throw
year
sand in my
or
face.
Something. But yeah, no. But it's having trouble with that American accent. You can
yes.
hear it.
So it's a movie about a little girl and a bunch of geese. Mm-hmm. That's I love that ducks and geese imprint very fast. So if you see someone who befriends a baby duck, the baby duck will just assume you're its mom and follow you around, and it's really fucking cute. But they need to migrate, so what Jeff Daniels, the father, has to do is build an aircraft, get her in it, so the ducks will follow her in the air and learn how to fly and migrate on their own. Yes, very heartfelt.
Yeah. It's very heartfelt.
Typical.
It's really beautiful photography.
Yeah, actually, yes. Yeah. Yeah, totally. But just the things 3 p.m. on HBO was made for in the mid-90s. Totally. But that's it for the movies as far as the notable ones.
Yep. And for music, I'm sure people are going to call us that we got Tupac's the day of Tupac's murder wrong. It is actually this week, September 13th. But we didn't have as much to talk about last week. So
yeah, let's put it up there.
Yeah, whatever.
We're all experts on Tupac. No one will be offended by any of our information.
So moving on to TV from this week. On September 9th, Fox debuted a pair of short-lived sitcoms that really encapsulate the mid-90s in terms of sitcoms. Mm-mm. There was Lush Life, which starred Lori Petty as a bohemian type who shared a studio apartment with her straight-laced friend.
Lori Petty, currently see on Orange is the New Black, and see her butt in Point Break.
So that lasted 7 episodes.
Tank Girl.
That same night was
that sounds like Dharma and Greg, doesn't it?
Nah. Yeah, kind of. Except they're both Dharmas. There's Greg is a girl. That's more accurate description.
That's funny.
That same night was the debut of Party Girl, the TV adaptation of the Parker Posey movie, which substituted Christine Taylor, Ben Stiller's wife, who's in
Marsha Brady, Melody from Hey Dude.
Yes,
the most beautiful woman of my childhood.
But that lasted 4 episodes. So other notable debuts this week include Access Hollywood.
No. Oh God, no!
Dragon Ball Z in America on UPN. But the most notable debut of this week, here is the intro for the first season, which very much describes the show better than I possibly could.
Hi, I'm Ray, and I live here in Long Island with my wife, Deborah. She's great with the kids, the house, everything. Oh, I don't know how she does it. We've got a daughter, Allie, and twin 2-year-old boys. It's not really about the kids. My parents live across the street. That's right. And my brother lives with them. Now, not every family would go buy on a conveyor belt for you, but mine would, because
everybody loves Ray.
Yeah.
You're all passing by him
an
as he mentions
them. Amazing promo. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's not a promo. That's the credits.
For season one.
Is it really?
That's the opening of the show.
And it's a great way to get the very deep, heady premise of the show into people's brains. Actually, not really. It's very simple. It's a very, very dependable sitcom. That's what I'll say about this show.
Sturdy.
This show and King of Queens, I like because it can always depend on it to be, entertaining.
Yeah.
And, just looking at, I don't know, a lot of sitcoms besides maybe, Friends or Seinfeld, not every person in the show is in every episode. But this is, Ray is in every episode. Mm-hmm. His wife is in every episode. like, I think the person who's out of the most episodes is Ray's dad, who Dear is, like, Boyle. Out of... He's not in three episodes. Besides that, everyone is in just about every episode, and every episode is set in Ray's house with, like, maybe sometimes they'll go
out
somewhere.
I'm a famous sports writer.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Newsday.
I can afford to raise three children on a writer's salary.
Hey, Newsday's a big newspaper, all right?
Yeah. I appreciate that they just do that instead of spending the whole pilot going, like, Ma, I know you live next door with my brother, but that doesn't mean you can barge in all the time.
Yeah. But, yeah, so went nine seasons with 210 episodes.
Wow.
Great cast. Like, great cast. Patricia Heaton as his wife, Doris Roberts and Peter Boyle as his parents, and Brad Garrett as his brother.
Hulk Hogan, never forget.
I mean... I can watch, like, this is a show that I watch a lot of when I go home for Christmas, and it's like, well, I'm going to DVR Everybody Loves Raymond, because it's not a show I would seek out, but it's a show that, like, that's on right now? Sure, I'll watch it.
Then there's a documentary for you on Netflix about the co-creator, Phil Rosenthal, bringing the concept to other countries and localizing Everybody Loves Raymond for other territories, and it's just about him traveling around and trying to explain why the show works, and I think it's funny just because, like, Why was that popular? Why was that so popular? It's so simple and like
our country, our parents live with us until they die.
I attribute that to the fucking raw charisma of Ray Romano.
Yeah.
Super easy to make fun of. Great stand up has about 30 minutes and that's it as far as I can tell.
But
I remember my dad and I we were watching Dr. Katz and in the first season Romano fucking kills it constantly and we were in love with this guy and then all of a sudden we're watching Letterman and Letterman had just started I'm going to make TV shows for other people, including a show called The Good Life for HBO, a black and white TV show set in the 40s. It does not exist. You cannot find it anywhere. But this was, I remember Raymond Romano coming on Dave Letterman's show to announce that Dave Letterman, I'm behind this guy. We're making a show together, Worldwide Pants Incorporated. But yeah, Letterman made Ray Romano, or Everybody Loves Raymond happen. And then that made Everybody Loves Chris happen.
Huh. Wow.
Everybody hates
Chris. Put that cookie down.
Fucking love Ray Romano. He's great. If you don't believe me, just his scene in Funny People where he's being yelled at by Eminem. Thanks, Marshall.
I got this great new joke my kids love. Let me test it on you guys.
If you go see his stand-up, that is is it, man. That is what he does. Yep. I've seen four of his stand-up specials, and they're all the same.
Yeah, and I know it's very easy to shit on vinyl on HBO. Mm-hmm. They canceled it. It's not coming back, but he was great on it.
Men of a Certain Age. Great show. TBS or TNT canceled. Another show that he created.
And if he's anything like Kevin James, he'll have a new sitcom on CBS in a year, and it'll be just the same sitcom. So that does it for TV of 1996.
I miss
Peter
Boyle.
We have a game worth talking about.
We do, a big game worth talking about. I love being able to talk about this period in gaming. I think previously, Diana, you have let me bore you with talk about Knights, the Sega game about the flying ambiguous gesture.
Uh-huh.
But there were new systems with new powerful chips inside them and capable of new graphics, and that would have been 3D. And I love that I was there during the period that what kind of game do we make in 3D? They can't all be Doom. And so during this period it's awesome. It's just you had this boom circle 3D and then three branching out parts, and you have Knights and you have Super Mario 64 and you have Crash Bandicoot, which is very strange and not a formula a lot of people copied, but is almost a precursor to the free runners you see now on mobile games. But clearly people love Crash Bandicoot. I definitely loved the first one at the time. It definitely wore out its welcome with me. And the character. I love that. So it also has a fascinating history, because I believe the first one isn't on PSN or something like that, but the other ones are.
It's not on PlayStation Now or whatever, that streaming service. But
yes.
If you have the PS3, you can play it on that.
It's created and developed by Naughty Dog, and eventually we all realized Crash Bandicoot is owned by somebody else, apparently, but Sony, in its marketing... Mm-hmm. Really put Crash Bandicoot front and center, and I love this is the original Crash Bandicoot commercial. It's a very 90s commercial.
At 22:16 hours, we got a call that a man was acting erratically in the store. He's acting like a maniac. When we arrived on the scene, the store had been emptied of its customers because of the behavior of this gentleman. It took us a while to control the situation, and there was some frustration involved. We've had three incidences this week. I wouldn't go as far as to say epidemic. They're annoying.
Oh, probably didn't work well in audio. Yeah. We might cut that down a little bit. But it is just very 90s tongue-in-cheek commercial about a guy wearing the Crash Bandicoot invincibility mask and running around a convenience store.
I mean, he would become even bigger and like had those commercials.
But that's what I'm saying. Like that's how the first game was promoted.
Yeah.
Whereas eventually, Crash Bandicoot, for this that generation of PlayStation hardware, became their Mario.
Yeah.
And a pretty obnoxious one at that.
Kind of in the same way... Sorry, Diana, that like WWE would be like, we're calling out WCW and we're yelling at you through a megaphone. Like, there were commercials where Crash would yell at Mario through a megaphone.
Oh,
like,
I remember
he went
that.
To place, Nintendo headquarters.
Crash wouldn't just... Crash as that character wouldn't just pimp his own games. He'd appear with Lara Croft and Sweet Tooth to promote everything on the PlayStation.
But he's also got attitude.
He's got... This
Come
is
on out,
attitude.
Plumber boy.
Poochie. Would you like to work here?
I'm not housebroken.
IRL, in real life, a guy in a Crash Bandicoot suit showing up at literally showing up at Nintendo's headquarters with a megaphone.
Hey, plumber boy, mustache man, your worst nightmare has arrived.
Pack up your stuff. I got a little surprise for you here. Check it out. What do you think about that? We got real time, 3D, lush organic environments. How's that make you feel, buddy? Feel a little like your days are numbered?
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
You're hurting my elbow.
Just crazy.
And Mario's days were indeed numbered. Number infinity. Still around.
Number about 64, thinking.
Yeah, but just what a wonderful time to
it
be
was. This was very much,
stuff.
And I mean, we'll probably get into it even more with to Mario 64 in a month or so. But like it was, this was like the biggest that the platform wars were ever waged.
Yeah.
Like this was like every console had their like representative. It was Knights versus Crash versus Mario.
And they're all great.
Yeah. Yeah, they all. I mean, like, granted, Crash hasn't aged all that great, but it,
I think it's
like,
aged. I could argue it's aged the worst. But the music and the characters are still awesome.
I say Knights does, though. I just don't. I don't think Knights was that great to
There's
begin with.
There's no other game in the universe that plays like Knights.
Yeah,
guess, but it's just as incoherent.
To its detriment, because it's like it's confusing and like, oh, you're on the ground now. What?
Crash
what happened?
Is a level where you run towards the camera with no knowledge of what's coming up in the environment.
It's a great tribute to Indiana Jones.
I know, but it's still kind of bothersome. And yeah, this is from Naughty Dog, the people who made the Uncharted series. Yeah. This is not where they started because they.
So
were...
If you want to play this game on your PS4, get Uncharted 4. Spoiler,
you
it's
can
in
play
there.
It in Uncharted 4. This is true. But that wraps up our 1996 segments. We'll go out with some music from the original Crash Bandicoot. When we get back, we'll talk about movies, TV shows, more pop culture from 2006.
All the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see what's worth a watching. And 50 years ago this week, September 12th, 1966, again, even 50 years ago, it was the beginning of the TV season, a little TV show called The Monkees debuted. The Monkees have such an... There's like, the story behind them is, like, more interesting than anything they ever did. The idea that they were preformed like boy bands are now, where they put out an ad for musician actors, they showed up, and they're like, okay, you're going to be in this TV show that's going to be like A Hard Day's Night about a band. And you're also going to record songs. But actually, we won't let you play on any of them, and you can't write any of them. And sometimes you're not even singing on them. Just you know, whatever. We're going to release an album and not even tell the band members that we did. It's such a strange thing. And yet, the show is goofy and silly and fun. The songs, a lot of classics in there. Some of them written by them, some of them written by, I mean... Carole King and Jerry Goffin or Neil Diamond, the, you know, fantastic songs. And then 2 years later, here's what I'm going to recommend. Watch an episode or even like 10 minutes of the Monkees TV show and then watch 1968's Head, their feature film that they came out with right after the show ended. It is amazing. It is... I've never seen a group try to destroy their own image so thoroughly. because obviously they start out as this wacky, goofy group. They start getting into the counterculture. They want to have Jimi Hendrix open for them, but they've got, you know, like a teeny bopper audience. And as they get more and more into counterculture, they want to express themselves more. They take more control over their careers, and they go in this weird direction. And Head is the strangest freaking movie you have ever seen. There's a part where they play Dandruff, and it's written by Jack Nicholson before he, like, became awesome. 1 year later, he's in Easy Rider, but before that, he was just a terrible actor in bad Roger Corman movies. I can't even describe how strange and weird this movie is in a way that's so different from the TV show, so I totally 100% recommend Head, 1968, and that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Aboard the 2006 train, welcome back to 302010, everybody. Music this week in 2006, September, what is it, 9th through the 15th. Plain White Tees, Every Second Counts, that's the Hey There Delilah song everybody loves and never makes fun of.
No.
Scissor Sisters has a new album out, the Fratellis, I think Brett described it as Costello music, the Franz Ferdinand song that was everywhere. Also new albums from Electric Six, Peter Frampton, Bob Seger, the Black Keys, and Papa Roach. But of course,
whoa,
we're coming.
That is a hell of a mix, man.
Indeed. And if you own all of those albums, you might not actually have any taste. You'll just eat anything, but everybody ate up this song, Sexy Back, Justin Timberlake. You might have heard of him. He's from the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yep.
Just great. But he made this one song. And
sometimes hosts SNL for no apparent reason. I don't know.
Yeah, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
News. I want to say happy 5th anniversary to 9/11. Yeah, this week in history, Saddam Hussein is on trial. Democrats urge President Bush to pull out of Iraq. And the Prime Minister of the UK, Tony Blair, announces he will resign in a year. And if that weren't bad enough news, Microsoft introduces us to the Zune. The Zune, which is somhow still has a marketplace open. The Zune marketplace. And again,
we should have Henry on right now to tell us about
Did
the
he have
Zune?
Zune.
No, we had the Microsoft phone.
But it had that one functionality that could have changed everything had it taken off. It was like an iPod, but remember the time, iTunes, everything was DRM. Like you couldn't even take shit off your own, put shit on your own computer technically.
You had to use the iTunes player
And that's what I'm whenever now it's DRM free. I'm like, you idiots, iTunes is DRM. Because I can't do anything with the stuff on my phone without iTunes permission. Unless you get like a hack program. Mm-hmm. But Zune allowed you to literally share music with your friends. Yeah. Like send digital songs wirelessly to people on their devices for a limited amount of time. I just thought that could have changed everything had anybody adopted it. Mm-hmm. People who make music would probably be making even less now. Yes, Zune, everybody, Zune. I believe we still have a stupid Laser Time Zune Marketplace tab on some of our podcasts.
Wow.
Because it was like back when we started up 5 years ago, people were like, dude, you got to add it to the Zune Marketplace, man.
What happens if you click on that?
Fuck if I know.
Your computer crashes.
I think we have some movies this week. That would be my responsibility, right? Let me see here. First, we have a bunch of movies I never heard of, including The Gridiron Gang.
According to the teaching staff, the inmates here have trouble responding to authority, being a member of a team, and accepting criticism. Now, what one activity can improve them in all these areas?
So you want to start a football team?
Exactly.
Your neck is way, way out on this.
You're crazy, Rock. Football teams can never work.
And following up on last week, yes, this is the last we'll see of The Rock's hair.
Gridiron Gang, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, an exhibit, I think, about Bad News Bears meets The Longest Yard, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that. I'll never watch it. But looking it up, it's like, this is the best scene in Gridiron Gang. No, this is the best scene in... No, this speech is so inspiring with millions of views. It is very bizarre to have a movie this beloved that I've never heard of starring The Rock. And this I thought was fascinating because I'd also never heard of it. Little movie called Everyone's Hero.
Give it up!
Yankee Irving may not be
the biggest kid on the block.
Guess nobody wants you in the game either.
You think you could take your thumb out of my eye?
Whoa!
But his dreams are larger than life.
Now batting for the New York Yankees, number one, Yankee Irving!
Ah, Jesus. I don't know anything about this movie other than... Oh, because the movie is about a little kid back in the day. Mm-hmm. Who has, it's based on a true Lou Gehrig story, I think, but in the movie it's about Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth loses his bat, and this kid finds it and has to get it back to him.
So it's like
his lucky bat.
It's like Mike. Which is a movie about the kid using Michael Jordan's sneakers and getting Michael Jordan powers.
But weirdly, it's one of its credited directors is Christopher Reeve. And I couldn't find any other information on it at a glance. He died before the movie was completed, but he has a director's credit on this film. And this is, completed posthumously, I imagine. But a huge voice cast, William H. Macy, Rob Reiner as a talking softball, if you didn't hear that.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Probably the most notable movie this week, and I'll just maybe let Diana go on this.
It was the most notorious murder in California history. To the public, it was a sensation.
This killer will be caught.
What is this movie, Diana?
This is the Black Dahlia.
Black Dahlia. African-American Dahlia.
Dahlia.
Wow, do I hate this movie so much.
Why is that? It seems like it'd be right up your alley, because the Black Dahlia is what? A series of...
It is a notorious murder from the... God, was it early 50s or late 40s? I'm sorry, I forget. But it's a real case. And there's a book by James Ellroy, mm-hmm. who also wrote... LA Confidential. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a quiz for you guys.
Please.
Now, I got two roles for women in my movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a tough girl from the streets.
Sure.
And I've got a femme fatale.
Mm.
We've signed Hilary Swank and Scarlett Johansson. Which one should play which role?
Well, femme fatale should be Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
And Hilary Swank, due to her Oscar win for Boys Don't Cry, can play and being the Karate Kid can be pretty tough.
And that's why you're not Brian De Palma. Because it is the other way around. Hilary Swank is the sexy femme fatale who's going to ruin Josh Hartnett's life. And Aaron Eckhart is really good at first, and then all of a sudden his character turns into somebody else, basically. Wow. And... it's got some really bad overacting. It's got some really obvious Brian De Palma. Look, I've seen a Hitchcock movie. Let me imitate it for no fucking reason. I assume he talks like that.
He does.
It's
based on a real life unsolved murder?
It's a real life unsolved murder.
Okay.
Where,
a series of them?
No, just the one.
Okay.
But this girl was cut in half and drained of blood.
And I believe if you played L.A. Noir, there's an entire sequence inspired by that.
They reference it.
They do.
Yeah, and I think it turned out you find out who did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a real case, and so it goes into, you know, this speculative how could have been like this, and does it have something to do with, like, porn and drugs and all this stuff?
But how does that result in a body cut in half and drained of its blood?
Well, maybe she knew too much.
Really? But what would it's not Assassin's Creed? They can't find her information in her blood. Like, but to be this notorious for a single murder, I just imagine, like, I don't know. Is it not a fascinating movie?
No.
No.
I read the book, and the book is pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it's no LA Confidential, which is just the book is it's amazing. It's amazing how different it is from the movie, and what a good job they did breaking down just certain parts and putting in the movie. LA Confidential is fantastic. This was just sort of like, I don't know what the hell happened. If they had script problems, if they re-edited. I mean, there's a couple performances. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking on her name. Harry Potter's aunt. She pops up in this, and she eats so much scenery. You really worry about, like, her digestion. Oh, it's bad. It's so bad, it makes me mad. It makes me angry.
Very few movies are made exactly for you. But hey, you had Hollywoodland last week.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We don't get classic noirs anymore. When we do, a lot of times they fuck them up.
That one's all right. And I guess I can shove this in just because it's a good segue to TV. Because I can't tell whether it premiered on television or straight to video.
So it was. It aired on television.
Okay.
The finale of Teen Titans called Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo.
This fall... for the first time ever in an all-new original movie. the Teen Titans are going to Tokyo.
Pack your things. We're heading for Tokyo.
Oh, I really need a vacation.
We're here.
I don't know the Teen Titans from this period.
Yeah. No.
But on Cartoon Network right now is a super cute, chibi-fied, straightforward comedy with these characters with all the same voices.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You seen it?
Oh, yeah. I watched Teen Titans Go a bunch of times. It's really funny.
I had to reluctantly admit I loved it because I was not ready for that.
Yeah.
It's really good, Teen Titans Go. But Teen Titans, this is the series, acts as the series finale for Cartoon Network.
Also, let's note that Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo, the acronym is TTTIT. But yeah, lovely. The show itself had its last episode in January of 2006, and this was like the movie finale, as so many shows will close out with. Also this week, if you want to talk about movies, on September 9th, Sasquatch Mountain airs on Sci-Fi. I couldn't find a clip of the trailer or anything, sadly, but it's the Wikipedia description is amazing. A lonely tow truck driver, played by Lance Henriksen, gets caught in a deadly struggle between a pair of bank robbers with a beautiful hostage, local cops, and a monster that has come down from the Arizona mountains to eat human flesh.
Oh, man. See, I thought it would... I just assumed it was a mountain-sized Sasquatch.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
On September 11th, 2006, two of the most American things to happen on television to celebrate the anniversary happened. Monday Night Football moved from ESPN, moved from ABC to ESPN. So after 35 years on network television on ABC, it moves to cable. I remember this being a huge kerfuffle because, I watch my football on it. I don't have a cable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can completely see. I just got an antenna, and I can completely see, this is enough. This is plenty to watch.
It still airs on ESPN, and it's still, one of the most popular things to air on Monday.
We just did a laser time about that nothing eclipses football in the ratings now. Like, one scripted show a year in the top 10 will crack the top 10. It's all football.
Yeah. Also on September 11th, John O'Hurley replaces Richard Karn as the host of Family Feud. So the second least remarkable host of the Family Feud replacing the least remarkable host of the Family Feud. Dude, fight
I don't think so, Dave.
Who do you think is... Nobody is less suited for Family Feud as Richard Karn.
I have reason to love Richard Karn.
But as a host of...
I asked my girlfriend, who was your childhood crush one time? And she's like, it was...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was Al. It was Richard Karn. I'm like... I can live up to that. I can get kind of fat and beardy. So I can do this.
She would love if Richard Karn was like Richard Dawson and hide everybody in the family.
So Richard Karn was from Home Improvement.
Yes.
Right. He's the fat sidekick guy.
Yeah. I don't think so, Tim.
Al Borland. Come on, let's be nice.
And John O'Hurley.
John O'Hurley.
Who the fuck is that guy?
He's Elaine's boss on Seinfeld.
Oh, I love that guy.
Yep.
I talks like
that
this.
Number one answer is
Charlton Heston, basically. love that guy.
September 14th, man.
Why did you have this here? Just so I can get this out of the way, because it's totally wrong.
What?
But I wanted to play it anyway. You said something about Fantastic Four and Bleach.
Oh yeah, so two cartoons debuted on Cartoon Network this week. Fantastic Four, World's Greatest Heroes, and Bleach,
I'm probably wrong about this, but I have the amazing Fantastic Four cartoon theme song, which sounded, at the time, 20 years older than it needed to be. I don't think this is from the 06 show. I think it's from the earlier 90s show, but it makes me laugh and happy all at the same time. Fantastic Four cartoon intro. That theme song had no business in the late 90s, 2000s, even if I'm wrong. And I know they changed it eventually. That was the first season.
It only aired for one season on Cartoon Network. Fantastic Four, World's Greatest Heroes.
I'm a big, huge Fantastic Four fan. And man, have they been kicks in the fuck. They were my introduction to comics.
Yeah.
Marvel's universe extends from the Fantastic Four. But they have not been treated very well in any medium, including comics, which is now they don't have one. It's canceled for the first time since the 19th. Shit. Yeah, Henry's not here. I don't want to quote dates and get yelled at.
But you can tell I'm in charge of TV because I had to mention this. September 14th, 2006 was the premiere of Survivor Cook Islands. And this I wouldn't just throw out any old Survivor because they're up to their 31st season. This was the 13th season, but it's notable because this is the season that they divided the tribes by race.
Are you kidding?
Whoa. Yeah, so they had four tribes at the beginning of the season. There was a white tribe, a black tribe, Asian tribe, and Mexican tribe. And what happened...
Go Hispanic!
Yeah, so Asian won. Yeah. The Asian won this year, but it was... they only had like two episodes of the tribes, you know, divided by race, and then they just basically like merged them into like, you know, melting pots, I guess you could say.
And I bet it works swimmingly.
But it's all a metaphor for humanity.
But speaking of working swimmingly, multiple...
Which reminds me, we need to make a temporary alliance with the blacks before we leave.
But a lot...
It's a Survivor joke. It's pretty decent.
It's uncorroborated whether this was the reason, but this was a season that a lot of advertisers dropped out. Coca-Cola, Home Depot, UPS stopped advertising. But... You know, Survivor still remained in the top 20 until 2012. Like, it was still one of the top 20 rated shows. Still gets over 10 million viewers an episode. Wow. So I think they probably didn't have that much trouble replacing those advertisers.
So it's 2006, and I remember clearly that Survivor debuted in 2000.
Yeah.
And they're on the 13th season in 2006. So they do at least two a year?
Yeah, they do a
fall one and a spring one.
And I think, because like unlike scripted shows, Survivor was just like, we air this all in order with no breaks, and then it's over.
Yeah, more or less. They'll have like, when there's a, like March Madness for the NCAA, they'll take 2 weeks
or
off.
Or Real Sex. I'm thinking of the wrong network.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But they'll have like one or two breaks per year. But yeah, more or less it's like September to December. Then like... February to April.
I'm waiting for him to stop with the tropical locales and do like Survivor and Empty Block in Detroit.
Yeah, that'd be great.
No way. Then you're not going to see people in bikinis and bathing suits. And
we can do it in the summer.
They'll just be making it out of old insulation, copper wiring.
But you'll love the upcoming Survivor season for 2016 is Gen X versus Millennials.
Are you kidding?
Yep.
Are we even?
If you wanted something even more divisive than race,
we need to unite against the boomers, people. Come on.
We're both too lazy.
Boomers. You want to see 50 and 60 year olds on Survivor? No way.
That's the enemy. Yeah. They're holding all the money and own all the houses.
Exactly.
But that's it for TV for this week.
It's actually finally a more interesting time for video games.
Yay.
And Diana, you might even be slightly interested with this. What is Rule of Rose? I've never heard of it.
I was going to say that's the wrestling game where, like...
No, Rumble Roses?
That's Rumble Roses.
We streamed that
one. Rule of Rose is an RPG, I want to say. But
Mega Man ZX is out. It takes place after the Zero Games, created developed by Inti Creates, published by Capcom. You can choose two characters, and it played more like a sequel... ZX Advent, Brett says they're fun and hard, but kind of Metroidvania. They are, I think, if you're mad about not having a Mega Man game and you haven't played the ZX games, you need to, one, shut up, and then go play those because they're great extensions of that franchise and that formula, but they're kind of lost on, DS at this point? But probably the most notable game because it kind of changed everything.
By the way, sorry, Rule of Rose was a survival horror game.
Got it. But probably the biggest game that most of everyone played because it's been available on like every platform under the sun.
Mm-hmm. All the fun of the original Star Wars trilogy has combined forces with Lego.
I
want Star Wars 2, the original trilogy.
How confusing is that? For George Lucas, I'm sure he's fine with it.
Yes.
Doesn't seem to mind there's confusion in the
marketplace. I think people just remember the Lego like video games. Like, oh yeah, they started with like the original Star Wars movies. No, they didn't. They started with the
prequel trilogy. Yeah. And that's the thing. At this point, there were a ton of Star Wars prequel games. All of them. Mm-hmm. All of them terrible. Yeah. Except for maybe a pod racer game here and there. Don't yell at me, people. But then Lego. There have been Lego games before. But then they got...
I don't remember any Lego... like.
Not with
games,
a
like
license this big.
Yeah, really?
There have been plenty. I think even made by Traveler's Tales. Yeah. But they got the Star Wars license. And they essentially what they use the license to do is to make a game, obviously, that unfolds with the events of the movie.
Right.
But... little silent comedy gags. Yeah. So to me, the Lego Star Wars games especially are perfect cartoons. They're really funny and charming.
Because everyone has all these movies committed to memory, you can like take these scenes with pantomime. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, if you go to one of the games they make nowadays, like Lego Jurassic World, is any part of that movie classic enough that I will remember without dialogue? So they have to put the dialogue in there.
Yeah, and I hate the dialogue in the Lego games now. Yeah. But I also don't really like the Lego games. It never gets better to me than Star Wars. Lego Star Wars 2... colon the original trilogy. Jesus yeah. Christ. But it sold over 8 million copies on like every platform. It's been on PS2, original Xbox, 360, and PS3, collected in together with the prequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. I'd say this is probably the most fun one to revisit. I would love to see how it would hold up with an HD remaster. Looks like garbage.
No, it came out on the 360 because they did the entire collection on 360, I remember.
Yeah, so you can probably still buy this places. But that wraps it up for games, and I think that wraps it up for 30, 20, 10.
I wonder, actually, with Lego Star Wars, I wonder how does the game interconnect with, they did some animated, like, short specials?
What?
I saw one of them that was actually really funny. It was on Cartoon Network, and it was like a special.
I can see that either being a promotional thing or
they're doing a Lego Batman movie now.
Now they're
doing a whole Batman movie, but this was almost Robot Chicken-y in that it was like a bunch of sketches, but there were a couple points where there was like a little robot George Lucas and like Darth Vader wanted to be in every scene and little robot George Lucas would have to convince him.
Wow, was there dialogue?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, it was really cute, and I
don't remember what it was called except for Lego Star Wars something something something.
But I this game is so charming. So charming. I remember one of my favorite headlines from your husband, who worked at Games Radar, made a giant panorama. That's the big image to promote the bestest article of that day on the front page.
Yeah.
And it was Chewbacca ripping the arms off of a Lego stormtrooper, and Michael's headline was just, holy crap. that summed it up for me as well. Like, this is wonderful. This is everything I ever wanted. And I don't know. I think that gameplay style, it's not for me anymore, and they're all the same, and it's kind of tedious. But the jokes, the humor in Star Wars, Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, will last forever. Good for that game.
Cool.
And we've streamed that game and a bunch of others on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/lasertime. You can check that out. We'll probably have played Crash Bandicoot over there, show you what the experts think of Naughty Dog's 20-year-old game at this point. Also, lasertimepodcast.com is where you can find all this stuff. It all lives there. You can see when it goes up interesting articles that we write. I recently wrote about Animal Olympics because I wanted to be the only one in the universe to write about Animal Olympics during the Olympics.
You succeeded.
You're welcome. Yeah, nobody looked at it, so it's still there somewhere. But we have that show, Laser Time, the show that sort of inspired this one. Instead of being date-based, it is topic-based.
Yep.
We recently had a great episode, I thought, called Lost in Localization. If you want to hear what John McClane and Darth Vader and Ash from Evil Dead sound like in other countries, we talk with our buddy Greg Moore, who has localized things to and from Japan previously, and it's much harder than you think.
This show was brought to you via donations from Patreon.com, patreon.com/lasertime. If you wish that this was 30-2010-0, Bonus Time, our weekly bonus show, is where we talk about stuff that we've been watching lately. Oh, yeah. And
the Tick, Pete's Dragon, baby.
Yeah, and I'll be talking about that improv movie, which has the worst name ever that I still can't remember, with Mike Birbiglia, made by Ira Glass.
Hello, this is my movie. Act 1.
And Patreon is also the home to Cheap Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast. I actually forgot to mention, September 15th, 2006 is when UPN closed as a network, and the very last thing to air, WWE wrestling. SmackDown.
Wow.
That show, like, ties so many networks together, it's weird.
What I went looking to see, like, what is your network sign-off video? Yeah. And I couldn't find one for UPN, but WB had like a...
It's probably like The Rock doing a rock bottom.
Like. It's like, it was like a hard to say goodbye with a montage of like Buffy characters and Dawson's Creek characters. It was really, really weird.
We'll be talking about that on the next episode.
Yay! Yeah, I mean, sort of.
Yeah.
But that is it for us. Diana, does your husband do anything cool?
He does. He marries me.
Yeah. Over and over.
All the time.
What a just weird
into that thing. Anyway, no, he talks video games on Video Game Apocalypse, which is a show where they talk about top five whatever themed things and current games and upcoming games and games.
Yeah, it's super fun. I'm on that show a bunch. And Diana, you are at Listen-A-Nerd on
Listen-A-Nerd.
Listen-A-Nerd.
L-E-C-I-N-E. C.
Yes. N-E-R-E-D. Oh, God. N-E-R-D.
Yep. Yes. You want to talk classic movies, throw out suggestions and answer questions and whatever.
You're really good with that, because I've been really bad with Twitter as of late. But I believe we have one more segment to 30-2010.
Oh, birthday is a doodly-doo.
And this week it is a doodly-doo. Born this week, Colonel Sanders, who I guess is an actual person.
Yep.
Hugh Grant, Colin Firth, those lovable Brits. Arnold Palmer is 86. Wow. His drink is not that old, but also really good. Papa Bear, Bill O'Reilly. Chris Columbus. Guy Ritchie, Ludacris. Paul Heyman. Moby. Mackenzie Adelajem, I'm sorry, I got that name wrong, is an actress on Nurse Jackie, but was born on September 11th, 2001.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Paul Walker, RIP. 2 Chainz, Yao Ming, Louis C.K., Ben Savage, Tyler Perry, Fiona Apple, Lone Wolf Baron Corbin, Tom Hardy, and Tommy Lee Jones, and this week's mystery birthday, mm-hmm. born in 1996, or sorry, born in 1966.
Okay, they're turning 50. All right.
SNL alum.
Alum.
Dana Carvey.
And was in Airheads.
Adam Sandler?
Yes.
Adam Sandler.
Happy birthday to me. I'm 50.
Wait, what is the date on his birthday? Did he debut with the Monkees?
Perhaps.
We will have something celebrating the birthday of Adam Sandler for some reason on MajorTimePodcast.com.
We already have the Little Nicky
We stream the as much of the Little Nicky Game Boy game as we could tolerate. I cannot believe how much voice acting is in it and that he pees in things.
Yeah, September 9th, 1966.
He just beat the Monkees to air, man.
People say I'm Monkey Ranch.
Being born before 9/11 is fucking awesome.
That is it for
I'm leaving.
We got it. No more. Bye.